You want me to take a cute boy with a hot accent around all day? Sign me up.
Monty Python fan, Anglophile, any kind of Euro music, Madonna. I loved anything that had to do with England or a posh accent.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Jessica Henkin. With me today
is me, Aaron Henkin, Jessica's husband.
That's true. He's the new co-host of the Stoop podcast as Laura takes a sabbatical.
And now we've got a organized time to spend quality time together.
Yeah, it's like a date.
I think it's going well so far.
Might get lucky. All right. This week on the podcast, speaking of getting lucky, is Cheerio Love, two stories about romantic Anglophiles. How would you say Cheerio Love in a British accent?
Well, I wouldn't, because I don't watch as many British TV shows as you.
You don't like them as much as I do.
I always have to put the subtitles on, and then I fall asleep.
You're like an Anglophobe.
I think that's fair to say.
I'm
but the storytellers on today's episode, very much Anglophiles,
yes,
as we're about to hear.
Yeah. Yes. This first story is told by Penny, and they shared it at a show recently at the Creative Alliance. Yep.
Stories of teenage bad ideas and questionable judgment.
Yeah, it was a great show.
Two of which revolved around this Anglophile theme.
Yeah, well, not intentionally, but yeah, it just kind of was kismet. Take a listen.
This is a story that I like to call Truancy in the UK. And it is about the time when I was 15 that I convinced my entire family that I was going on an international school club trip to London. But really, I was going to by myself to meet a boy that I had fallen in love with in the months prior. It all starts in February of 1996 in the cafeteria of my freshman year of high school in Warren Hills, New Jersey. And my friend Lisa comes running in, all excited. She just met these two cute boys, and they're from England. And they want to shadow high school student and, like, you know, learn about high school in America. But she couldn't take both of them with her all day. So could I take Dave with me all day to just follow me around classes? And I said, oh, you mean you want me to take a cute boy with a hot accent around all day? Sign me up. And I couldn't tell you what happened throughout that school day, but I can tell you that by the end of it, when he was walking me to my bus line, we were both 100% head over heels in love. But he's going home to England the next day. So, you know, I'm not going to hear from him again. This is just like whatever. 2 days later, I get a dozen roses delivered to my high school with a gorgeous poem note. And then the long distance phone calls started. And then one day when I was whining and crying about not being, well, I wish I could see Dave. And my friend Lisa was like, you know, I know someone in a travel agency that can hook us up, and we can probably get you a ticket to London for pretty cheap. And why not make up an entire club that doesn't exist and tell everyone about this? Now, how did I trick grown-ass adults into thinking this was a real thing? A lot of lies, fake phone calls, and a fuck ton of forgery. My favorite was, back in the day, we would take an old permission slip, white it out, Xerox it. I don't know if you guys know what a Xerox machine is. And then use the word processor in the library to fill out whatever it is that I needed to fill out. And so I think it took about 3 months of planning, a lot of misdemeanor theft on my part, too, for cash. Not proud of that, but, you know, teenager. And the day finally gets here. I'm on my way to the airport. There's only one thing I haven't covered, and that was how am I going to call myself out of school for the 4 or 5 days that I would be missing. I didn't really care. I figured I'd just do it when I got there, because what are they going to do, right? Like, I'm already there. And that's exactly what I did. We were like at the museum in London, the National Museum, and I'm on a payphone calling the office, pretending to be a family member, like saying I'm sick, because I've done that before, like no big deal. And they were like, uh-uh, we know, the jig is up, you're not where you say you are, you're not with who you say you're with, and you're busted. Hang up the phone, run outside, and be like, well, that's in New Jersey, I'm in London, let's just go hang out in London all day. I will figure this out later when I have to. So we have our day in London, and it's adorable and fun, and then we're on our way to our next destination, which I think is supposed to be a couple hours outside of the city, and we get lost. We're like taking buses, and we're so lost. And so Dave takes us to one of those TARDIS phone booths, and he's calling his friend and trying to get directions, trying to figure out where we are and where his friend is. And I look out the phone booth, and there's this old man just kind of creeping up into the phone booth and staring. And I was like, yo, Dave, what? There's an old man out there, like, leering at us. And he turns around, and he's like, that's my dad. How in the hell his dad found us in a random phone booth when we didn't even know where we were? To this day, I don't know. No idea. He pulls us out of the phone booth, and he's pissed, and he points at Dave, and he's like, you're in deep shit. We know that she's not 16. Newsflash, Dave is 18 years old. He told his parents I was 16 because that in England is the age of consent, but I'm actually 15. So now Dave's dad is saying that there's like they're afraid that my family's going to charge them with kidnapping me. Like he's mad. Like he's like, we got to take her home right now. I got to call your family, let them know that we're not kidnapping you. And so that's what we did. We went back to his house, which is actually like 5 hours away from London. Like it was very far away. He makes me, I call my family. And after what seems like forever of convincing them that I was not there to smuggle drugs or to try the new abortion pill that had just come out. I'm a virgin, for Christ's sake. Like at this point. And after all of that, his parents promised my family that they would chaperone us for the rest of my stay, and then figure out how to get the airline ticket changed from 5 days later to 3 days later, and that's what they did. And so that's what happened, is we ended up having this like this chaperoned royal kind of day and a half around Plymouth, England, two kids in love with their matching guitar pick necklaces, walking down the beach with the I Love You Mickey in the sand, and his parents are just off to the side, just watching us. So our last night is upon us, and we beg his dad to let us stay in the same room for the rest of the night, just to hold each other, just to be with each other for one last time. And he actually agreed. Like it took some convincing, but he did agree. And I wish I could tell you that we did more than just kiss, but all we did was hold each other, listen to Glycerine by Bush over and over again. And we kissed. There was like a sweet kiss in there. We were so innocent. I wish I gave it up that night. It's one of the things I regret, actually, is just not doing that. Anyway, so I get back home, and I am in the deepest of shit. I am not only like grounded forever, but I'm legally under house arrest because turns out it's illegal to leave the country under false pretenses as a minor. That was a thing. My passport was revoked. They were like, you can't have this back until you're after you're 18. And also, there's an officer outside your trailer park to make sure that you get off and on the bus and you don't go anywhere else for the rest of the semester. So backing up a little bit, we promised each other that I would wait until I was 18, you know, we'd be together, and that we would meet up in Times Square in New Year's Eve 1999, because that's when I would be 18. And But like 4 months later, this like cute boy moved into my trailer park. And 2 years is a really long time to wait when you're that young, right? So I wrote him a letter, and I effectively broke his heart over mail. To this day, I regret slipping that letter in the mailbox, no lie. And we did end up meeting up in Times Square, incoming 1999, New York City, which is a Stoop story in itself. But the conclusion to that part was that, like, he still very much was heartbroken. He was like, we can't be friends. You crushed me. Yeah. So I have spent the majority of my adult life wondering if this was, like, a story of first love or a story of teenage bad decisions. But I think it's more of a story about how, at that age, you can't tell the difference. And, you know, I didn't know that back then every decision I made was etched into my future now. I thought I was just chasing a boy across the ocean, but maybe I've also been chasing that same whimsy, passion, and excitement that I experienced before my frontal lobe was formed. Thank you.
I love that story.
A romantic comedy in the making, I feel like.
It would be a great movie. It absolutely would. Because
so would the next story, as a matter of fact. Both of these, I mean, teenage misadventures are the stuff of great cinema.
Yeah. But you didn't. You were like a good boy.
I never misbehaved when I was a teenager.
That's not true. You did. But you never got caught.
I think that's more fair to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nor would I get on stage and probably share any of those exploits.
Well, they're not sharing as teenagers.
Well, I know.
Oh, but you wouldn't talk about... Yes, you did. You talked about when you had a gambling addiction when you were 18.
Well, okay, I guess. I guess there have been times when I've shared. All right, our program continues now with another story about a teenage questionable decision that also revolves around anglophilia. Enjoy this tale from Melissa Charlotte.
Hi, everybody. I made a lot of mistakes when I was a teenager, but I feel like this story in particular encapsulates my brain and how making one mistake, you don't fix it, but you just keep making more and make it even worse. So this was my 17th year. I was a graduate of high school, and it was this summer before moving to Baltimore to go to Towson University for my freshman year. And I was hanging out with my friends in Philadelphia and West Philly. We found a really cool dive bar that would take our fake IDs. And so we hung out there every weekend. And I just want to say that... this was 1983, so I was a huge Monty Python fan, Anglophile, any kind of Euro music, Madonna. I loved anything that had to do with England or a posh accent. So this sort of informed my decision that evening. And also, I was always a very dramatic kid and adult. And so I would stretch the truth a bit. When I was a little kid, I told my whole neighborhood that I was Annie on Broadway when I was... Actually, I was away at summer camp for 2 months. I had a band when I was 16 called Claire and the Voyants. And I told... I told everyone my name was Claire to make it legit. So these are sort of background of why I made this decision going to Smokey Joe's that night, that I was going to be from England. And I was an English person. And I probably asked my friends, and they were like, no. But I fully committed to being from England and went around talking to all these boys that were University of Pennsylvania, cute fraternity boys that we loved to hang out with. And on this night, I met John, I think that was his name, and I most likely gave him a fake name for me. And I just went on and on with this English accent, and at the end of the night, we exchanged phone numbers. So that was great until I realized when I got home to Cherry Hill, New Jersey, that we had one telephone in the house, and I had to... tell my parents, like, listen, I met a cute guy, University of Pennsylvania, and you need to answer the phone until he calls in an English accent, just in case. So my mother was like, no. What? Stop. She was a little mean. She was a lot of mean, actually. And my dad was like, all right. He was game. He wanted to do it. He was gay. And he liked theater and to sing, so it was right up his alley. So all week, I was like very anxious every time the phone rang that either my mother would answer and be a bitch and say hello and sound like she was from New York, actually. She was from, or my dad would answer and be ridiculous. And mostly it was my dad just flying to the phone like, hello! He loved that. So one night, phone rings a couple days later, and I hear my father having this entire conversation like he had just inherited a castle. And so he's, yes, oh, yes, John, yes. Oh, hold, Melissa, John's on the phone. So, my God. So I answer the phone, and we have this full conversation, and we made a date. So I borrowed my parents' car, and I drove to Philly because John was a fraternity kid that had no car, even though he looked just like James Spader, and he was, like, tall, blonde, blue-eyed, very fraternity boy-looking kid, very opposite of me and my Cherry Hill girls. And we had dinner, and so I'm ordering the... I have the eggplant. Thank you so much. Is that a flannel top you're wearing? I love flannel. It's so... I don't know. I love... Yes, thank you. Oh, thank you so much. Waiter. So I'm doing full on, and he just... You know, we're talking and having a nice evening, but he never actually asked me, like, why are you in the United States, and what part of London are you from, and what do you think of, you know, never asked me that. So we went back to his fraternity house, and then the night was over. And I honestly could not take the stress anymore of all of this buildup of me faking this all night and for a week. And I finally, I think I just like went like this, and I said, I have to confess, I'm not from England. And you know what? He didn't care. Go figure. He didn't care. So I drove home kind of crestfallen because I thought he was cute and we had a good night, but he was kind of jerk because he didn't care about me at all. And the next day I told my parents, and my mom could have cared less, and my dad was kind of sad. He really liked bringing this BBC audition to life. And so we shared that, and in the end I did not get a boyfriend, but I got a free dinner and this cute story, and I think it was worth it. Cheerio!
What a great story. I love both these stories so much. Would you have played along with the English accent?
Yeah, probably. Well, my journey into parenthood has just been one of disagreeing with less and less and accepting more and more. So probably.
Remember your friend Brett had the best saying about how his parents approached parenthood, especially being grandparents.
Keep your mouth closed and your wallet open.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is like, that's the path of less resistance, least resistance. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. There have been, at this point, hundreds and hundreds of them, most of them produced by the amazing Maureen Harvey. We want to thank Baltimore Public Media for hosting the podcast on its platform. And if you want to hear more stories from The Stoop or about upcoming shows, you can visit us at stoopstorytelling.com.
Always a pleasure. Bye-bye.